Mark Bone goes into his first international break as Reading manager with 3 wins from 4 and a 3-0 cruise past Luton on Saturday. Begging the question, will it always be this easy? Welcome to episode 209 of the Tarleton Podcast with your host Mark Merrick, and joining me after probably the easiest day at the office we've had so far in the season is Johnny Williams. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, good, thank you. I seem to have rejoined the podcast ranks at a very good time, so I'm going to take some of the credit for this unbeaten run, I think. Since I've appeared on podcasts in the last month, we've not lost, so I think it can only be down to the positive influence I'm putting on the team through the method of podcast.
Well, it actually reminds me a little bit of the opposite, that when Matt Lawrence, Dear Old Panners and Nutmegs comes on, that seems to be inevitable defeats, so perhaps we need to get you both on a show at some point. I guess we'll draw or something.
Yeah, inevitable draw coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll jump into the recap in a second. And just before I do that, as the obligatory thank you to the Patreon campaigners who have continued to put their hand in their pocket and help us out with the odd bit of cash, which always goes a nice little extra way to helping us. It actually put our hand a little bit into it recently. For those of you who read our weekly column in the match programme will have seen that I wrote it this week, and that was following my trip down to Hogwarts that I had a couple of weeks ago, which was to interview Mr. Jordan Obita, and that is coming up in the international break, and that is a couple of quid, very useful for a taxi that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to necessarily get. So thank you very much for the Patreon campaigners, and they'll be straight in, hopefully, with the Jordan Obita interview, which you'll be seeing on the website about Thursday and on the podcast on Friday. So something to keep us interested in the international break, but we go into that break with a lovely 3-0 victory, and let's discuss that now in the recap.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Ars!
3 home wins on the spin then, Johnny. This was, as probably the best way I can describe it, a thoroughly professional performance. Morrison header to go 1-0 up, and then Ajario, I think it was a deflected effort, to make it 2-0, and then Gareth McCleary arriving with the sealer in the second half. And really, it was pretty much as simple as a day we get at the office.
Yeah, it really was. And the result just never looked in any doubt, which is a positive thing for a club that, you know, hasn't really been getting those sort of solid results and always looking like holding on. Even last week against Millwall, when it went to 2-1, we were a little bit nervy and sort of lost a little bit of control of the game, especially once they got that consolation. Whereas and in this match, there was just absolutely no danger. And we, if anything, looked like increasing that lead rather than Luton looking like reducing the deficit. Now, we've got to say, obviously, that was down to Luton being probably, well, most definitely the worst team we've seen at the Medeski this season. But at the same time, you can't put anything past these players in terms of their effort, their commitment. I did think that we sort of slacked a little bit after the couple of substitutions, bringing on McCleary and Mate. But then once the third goal went in, you know, that was game over, and you could see the Luton heads drop and you know, the stadium was rocking again. And it really just feels like the team are riding that confidence which Bowen has given them in the last month or so.
And that confidence, I suppose, is being shown most clearly in the opening stages of games, because we're not coming out and, you know, conceding early. We're not coming out and having a little bit of a go, then dropping back and, you know, being a bit more tentative. We're flying out the traps, basically. And it was the carbon copy almost of the Millwall game, coming out, getting those 2 early goals. And while there was that Millwall sort of jeopardy in the second half, as you say, the 5 minutes, I think, of Luton pressing high in the second half kind of subsided pretty effortlessly for Reading. And those starts, that sort of quick out the blocks mentality, I think it kind of suits this team, because as the 3-5-2 sort of is a creative system. We have 2 very creative players in Swift and Ajari in the middle. Swift, I think, has walked away already with our player ratings man of the match poll. And if you've got those players on form, get straight into it, and then you find yourself a couple of goals to good.
Yeah, and I think especially with John Swift, you know, we may as well mention him now, because I think that was one of his best performances, if not his best performance, in a Reading shirt. When he's a player that's got confidence and got time, he is you'd probably say a Premier League player in terms of his range of passing and his vision. Yeah, I remember one sort of outside of his right foot through ball he played possibly to Richards in the box, which was just, you know, absolutely sumptuous. I don't think anyone else on the pitch saw it. And he's got that quality. It's just a case of him having the time to deliver those passes and that vision and having the confidence to do that. Because let's not forget, only a month or two ago, he was one of the boo boys. He was the, oh, you've got to carry him in this team. He doesn't make any headers. He doesn't win any tackles. He's a shirker, blah, blah, blah. And so when you're a team that is sort of fighting relegation and in that bit of a battle, he's not a player you want in the team. But when it's a confidence side and one that is passing the ball around and one that's got players like Ajaro in there, and you can see that the link between Swift and Ajaro is obviously very good. The little interchanges that they have, and you've got Bulldog and Pushkas making runs off him as well, sort of going forwards. It's an ideal situation for Swift. Now, I'm sure we're going to come onto it, but when we hit a tougher run of games, are we going to see that same John Swift? Is Bowen going to find ways to free up his sort of imagination and his creativity? That will be one of the biggest challenges, because we know that when he is on form, he is a player that is good enough to play in the very top teams in this league.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it, is that when you probably say his best season so far for Reading has been his first season when we got into the playoffs under Yap Stam, and while he wasn't, you know, particularly good towards in the playoffs, basically, you would say that when we have, you know, when the going has got tough, that is when John Swift has not got going. That's the sort of typical game was, for me, just before Jose Gomez got sacked, when he lunged in with those two sort of desperate challenges and got sent off against Fulham. And that was a player who maybe was trying to get a bit of a more aspect to his game, a bit more of a physical aspect, but just wasn't being shown how to do it right. And Mark Bowen, I suppose, as someone who's Mark Hughes' sort of a long-term assistant, is probably the ideal man to show him how to do it. And what we saw, I remember one moment in the second half when he just kind of shoulder barged someone off the ball completely legally and ran off with it. My dad, who I sat next to, said, "That was Swift. You don't see that usually." And that was sort of typical of it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I just said, he's the player who, you know, doesn't put, ironically, seeing as he got red carded about a month ago, he doesn't put his foot in on challenges, and he certainly doesn't go up for headers. So to see him that confident that he thinks, right, I'm going to have this and I'm going to get the ball back and I'm going to drive it forward is brilliant to see, because we know that when he's on his game, he's one of the best players in this team, certainly.
Yeah, I must say my sort of unsung hero of the match was Omar Richards, who I thought probably had his probably level best or maybe best game in a Reading shirt so far. And the way the second goal came about was, you could say that Omar Richards lost his man at left back and had to rush back, but he makes a brilliant sliding tackle as the winger dribbles into the area, then brings it back out. And Moore and Swift bring it forward, and obviously Ajaria scores. But the brilliance of that tackle kind of underlined what actually is one of the best aspects of the squad at the moment, is Richards and Obita, who was out with a bit of a groin injury, we understand, as a competition for left back. That's a brilliant little competition that we've got going on there.
Yeah, it is. And you can see, again, with Richards, he's a player who's obviously oozing that little bit of confidence as well. Obviously, in that three-man defence with the two wing-backs, he's allowed to push on a little bit more. And if he's caught a little bit upfield, then there's normally someone there to cover him. Obviously, we saw that wing-back system under Gomez exploited a little bit more because they were caught upfield too often. Whereas now they sort of pick their times a little bit, you know, a little bit more choice, if you like. And obviously with this, the player who he tackled was sort of slowed up by Moore, because Moore was covering him, so he knew that he had the time to recover, and then he did manage to put in that tackle. And I think what was important as well, that sort of team spirit and that team ethic, was whilst people did go over to Ajaria to to congratulate him for the goal, obviously, there was also, I can't remember, one of the midfielders and certainly the defenders went straight over to Richards and said, you know, that came from you. That was because he got beaten for pace. It would have just been easy for him to say, OK, well, I'll just sort of, you know, jog back in my own time and pick up the pieces afterwards. But he wanted to sprint back. He wanted to win that ball back, and he did it. And it was good to see that the team are giving each other recognition as well, not just the goal scorer. There's a real collective amongst the team at the moment?
Speaking of team collective, there was an incident, I suppose, after the game we could talk about, which is Gareth McCleary posting on Instagram a big sort of a paragraph of how much his goal meant to him, nicking the ball off of the lackadaisical defender and with a nice easy sort of stroll in and good finish. It announced his return. He's had a couple of sub-appearances since Mark Bowen brought him back into the fold. But it was evidently quite an emotional sort of goal for him. And you can see from the Instagram post from the players as well, be they sort of passed from the club or current squad members, there's a lot of love for Gareth McCleary from amongst his fellow professionals. And that, I suppose you could say, that kind of brings back the thought that the way whoever, whether it's Jose Gomez or whoever, had decided that that was how they were going to handle the McCleary situation, an exiling from the squad, not only for the summer and the transfer window, but for the subsequent weeks after that, it does kind of drill home that that wasn't the right decision. And having said that, I'll quickly add in that Chris Gunter wasn't even at the ground by the looks of it on the weekend. So it's worked for one player and I suppose not for the other.
Yeah, and I guess another player who wasn't really exiled but wasn't getting in the squads or wasn't in the teams was Sam Baldock. And, you know, we've seen what he's done in the last few games under Bowen as well, you know, getting on the score sheet himself. And so, I mean, look, you don't want to sort of slate Gomez too much. Maybe he was under pressure to reduce the wage bill. Maybe there were other reasons behind it. They didn't fit into a system. We saw that he got rid of a lot of wingers. But one man's trash is another man's treasure. And Bowen has obviously recognised that Gareth McCleary has that quality, has that quality in his locker. And so does Sam Baldock, who's a proven striker at this level. And so for him to bring those back in, and, you know, in a sense, they do have something more to prove now, because they've got to prove to the manager and to the fans that they're not just sort of, you know, that they weren't part of the problem. Because when they were exiled, or when they were being left out of the team, in the case of Baldock, it was because the manager felt that they were detrimental to the squad or detrimental to the side. And so when they come back in and they feel like they've got something to prove, they're giving you that extra 2 or 5%. And, you know, those players are really showing it right now.
With Chris Gunter being, I think he posted a photo of himself at the Spurs game. I understand there's no sort of injury or anything like that. He's in the Welsh squad. Teddy Howe, the academy right back, was on the bench in the Luton game. With Gunter not even being at the stadium, I mean, conversely, compared to McCleary, his Reading career just seems completely over, doesn't it?
Well, it's strange because you'd have thought that that would be a new lease of life for him as well. And I think, you know, I think Bowen has said in the past that he was going to give Chris Gunter more of a chance, you know, for better or for worse, and depending what the fans think of him. I know that, again, for some, Chris Gunter is sort of public enemy number one. But if he does sort of come back and make the same impact then as McCleary and Baldock have, then absolutely that's what you want. But with his contract up at the end of the season, so we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. I would be happy to see Gunter at least sort of in the squad, because I think he offers you, he offers you something different to your Dom at right back if you're looking for a more defensive player. Or I think, you know, even at this stage of the career, how often do we see sort of right back slipping into centre back? And I think we've even seen that, you know, especially in a three-man defence. I think we've seen that in the past as well. I don't think Chris Gunter's washed up as a player, but look, well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe he's less fit. Maybe Bowen prefers the other options in the squad. Who knows? I think, put it this way, if Gunter were to come back into the squad, I certainly wouldn't, you know, think any worse of Bowen or of him. I'd welcome him back, because we've seen what can happen with McCleary and Baldock.
No, absolutely. I agree. I think it's a case that when a player like Gunter isn't being used, and as I've said, with McCleary, with the sort of outpouring of emotion from his fellow professionals, that suggests he has a likeable character, he's very useful in the dressing room, and that might have actually been a reason that Gomez sort of failed to stay in his job. But with Gunter, it's, again, is he that sort of character? We don't know. There's a lot of questions that are probably not answered.
Yeah, Gunter was a club captain. He's the most capped player for Wales ever. I think he's Welsh captain as well. You know, I don't think you get to be that position in terms of a leader without being a decent person as well. If you know, if that's sort of what we're arguing, no matter what you think of his play on the pitch and him always passing it backwards, as was always the sort of aspersion that was cast on him, you can't doubt that multiple managers at both international and club level have seen fit to play him constantly for 46 or even 60 games in a season at times and award him the captaincy. So I don't think you could, well, again, we don't know the ins and outs of the situation, but I'd be surprised if you could call his character into question.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's interesting that he's not been brought back in, because I suppose McCleary, as a good character, has come back in and made an impact. But yeah, it's one of those that I suppose it's probably going to run and run until January. Do we think that there's much chance of him leaving in January? I think his departure, if it goes to the summer, is almost sealed. But for January, do you actually see anyone coming in for him?
I guess so. I mean, well, you know, at that stage of his career, he'd probably be wanting sort of at least a year and a half on his deal. Yeah, he's not just going to sort of sign on a six month loan or a 6 month deal. So I guess it depends. And we don't know what sort of wage he's on at the moment as well. He won't have played in so long, so that might put clubs off. It's tough to say, to be honest. Like I said, I think him coming back into the squad wouldn't be the worst idea. We're paying his wages. We know that when he's on form and when he's on song, he's a quality right back at this level. So I don't see why, with one manager having sort of cut his nose off to spite his face, the next manager would do that as well. And I don't think that's what's happening.
Yeah, and my final point on it, I suppose, is that clubs don't tend to go into January transfer windows looking for right backs unless you've got an injury or something. That tends to be the last place that you look. Clubs want to sign strikers and those sort of things in January, so we'll have to wait and see what happens with him. Just a quick word as well, actually. Mark Berman speaking in the week about Vito Minoni and Sonny Aluko, who both are due back from their loans pretty soon abroad. Minoni in Minnesota, Aluko in Beijing. Bowen basically said that there's probably unlikely to be a future for either of them at the club, and that he basically insisted anyway that Raphael is his number one goalkeeper. And Minoni being on sort of a decent wage, there's not much point in keeping him around for number two purposes. So we'll have to see how those two come back and whether anyone wants them, I suppose, is the other thing. But we're going back to Saturday's game. Luton, let's just cover the facts, I suppose, that Luton were effectively the worst team at the Mad Sad this year. I've got a couple of Luton fan mates who are pretty disappointed so far with how Graham Jones has managed the squad. They played a sort of odd formation, like a 5-2-3, with constantly two players stuck on the flank, either flank, certainly for the first half, and no one in the middle, basically. The result of that, I suppose, was that they had four shots to our 17. And are we fussed about the fact that Luton weren't so good? Are we just gonna? I mean, we are gonna play at least six or seven teams this year at home who are in the bottom six or seven, and I suppose I'm perfectly happy with just mopping them up and moving on, and that being that.
Yeah, I mean, Luton came into this in pretty terrible form, and they were just really, really poor. They just had, you could see that there were sort of signs of quality, some signs of life, and some idea of what the manager was trying to get them to do. But too often, that sort of final pass into the final third was just completely wayward. And you can see that they're obviously missing some of the players that they've lost since they were promoted. Obviously, the one that Reading fans will know about is Jack Stacey, who's gone to Bournemouth, who's so integral to the way that they play. But I think there's also got to be a word said for how well Reading clearly are setting up against the opposition. And, this is something that I've noticed, is that in three of Bowen's four games in charge, the opposition has made a substitution at half-time. And as far as I'm aware, they were all tactical rather than being for injury. And in the other game that the sub wasn't at half-time, it was against Millwall. It was against Preston. And the manager made two subs in the 58th minute, which again is sort of quite an extreme move to make for a manager when you're just 1-0 down. In fact, at that time it was 0-0. So it just seemed to suggest that Bowen and his staff are forcing managers into making these sort of drastic early substitutions, whether it be for tactical reasons in terms of the way we're attacking them, or the way we are defending them and sort of closing them down. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot, basically what I'm trying to say, I think a lot of credit has to go to Bowen as well for the way that we set up to defend against them, because especially in the first half, they just had absolutely nothing. You could hear their fans were getting really irate about the fact that they really had no chances. And if you look at sort of the expected goals charts as well, I think it was 0.3, which is, you know, as good as nothing, and four shots, even though they dominated possession. So it really does say that for whatever reason, they weren't finding the gaps and they weren't finding the opportunities. I think the only decent chance they had was sort of in the first half at 0-0 when I think it was a corner or a free kick and a centre-back sort of shot straight at Raphael. And then after that, it was all Reading.
Well, it was all that expected goal tally as well that you mentioned. If you go onto the Tyler Senn Twitter, there's the it's a blog called Experimental 361 who sort of chart them over the timeline of the game. And Luton's basically sticks at 0.3 from the 25th minute onwards and doesn't go up again. So they basically didn't create a chance after the 25th minute. And obviously after them, we're cruising in the game. So what I will say on Barrett, we are going to talk about the future games coming up, is that the word of caution is that we were kind of in this position with Gomez at about the back end of August, when we were getting the better of teams tactically and we were, you know, performing so well, and they did work us out. Is that going to happen again? You know, how long's a piece of string? It's that sort of question we can't answer at the moment. But I will say that we just seem to have a little bit more, you know, that professionalism, just a little bit tighter, a little bit quicker, a little bit more thoughtful, which hopefully should mean that that's the sort of drop off the cliff isn't just around the corner.
Yeah, and I mean, I said this after I did the podcast after Bowen's first game, and immediately what you noticed was more pragmatism. And I think you see this especially with someone like Miazga, who isn't really the best on the ball for a centre-back. For a centre-back, but when you think of sort of the modern ball-playing defenders and constantly passing it around, and the ideal is never lumping it long, I think Miazga just feels, I don't mean to single him out, but it's just as an example, he's now got that license to, if we need to, lump it long, or rather play tactical hoofball, as some managers I'm sure would prefer to call it. Whereas you've always got the feeling under Gomez that there are certain players who were just a bit uncomfortable in the system, and they felt, and I always remember it under Stam, where I think Jordan Obita was playing at left back and he had to find a pass rather than, he clearly just wanted to lump it long. And so I think Bowen at least is being more pragmatic and knowing that the players can't always fit the idealistic tactical system that he wants to play. And we can't always sort of impose our will on the opposition. And obviously there's going to be games coming up, especially in the next month or so, where we're not going to be able to win that. You know, that the players aren't necessarily going to be better, and we're not going to have that confidence, and we're going to be away from home sort of fighting for our lives. And you just get the feeling with someone like Bowen, he just seems to know how to manage the squad tactically a bit better than someone like Gomez, who just was a little bit naive and kind of expected that his system would work every single time. I think that's what, yeah, like you say, how long is a piece of string? We've only seen four games under Bowen, and, you know, let's be honest, they have been relatively on the easy scale of things, certainly in terms of the two home games. In terms of the three home games rather. So yeah, I think we're just gonna have to wait and see, but I think you'd be a little bit more confident.
I was gonna raise this question after we hear from Mark Bowen, but I'll quickly ask it now. In terms of four games we've had so far with the international break coming up, what is the single biggest change he's made in your opinion? In terms of, you know, highlighting one area of the pitch, because for me, obviously the attack is more confident, but the tightening of the defence has been the crucial thing, because we're not constantly chasing games like we were under Gomez, and that makes it a whole different ball game, and it allows the attack to do their thing. So I think that actually his sort of one area of the pitch that he's done the most work on and improved the most is the defence. I don't know where you would say.
Yeah, I think that certainly is a big change, especially, you know, going back to Gomez. we always seem to try and build from the back. And there was countless amounts of times where we would pass the ball around the back and inevitably the press would come and we'd have to hoof it long, hoof it clear, and we'd lose possession. And that just seemed to be the relentless sort of way of things. And especially the amount of goals we seem to concede from sort of our own mistakes or our own doing, that was a constant theme under Gomez, especially when we weren't a very confident side. Whereas now under Bowen, I think he's just given those, like I said, with Miazga, but also with the other players, he's just given them a little bit more license to say, look, if you need to, then it doesn't matter if you sort of play it long. And, you know, you're even seeing centre-backs sort of play it to centre forwards. And so I think that's the biggest sort of tactical shift that I've seen from Bowen, is just that you're not passing it around the back and building it from the back and getting Raphael involved at every opportunity. We can play it long if we need to, and the fans don't mind that. You know, I think as long as you're not hoofing it up to strikers at every opportunity, the fans aren't going to mind.
Yeah, playing it back to the goalkeeper is what I would say is a last resort, basically, and that's kind of how we're treating it. So we'll hear from Mark Bowen now. Bowen. I'm really worried that I keep switching between Bowen and Bowen, and I don't know whether what is the correct one.
I say Bowen, but maybe it's sort of like scone. You just don't know.
Well, he's Welsh. I suppose we need some. Any Welsh listeners want to ring in with the official saying of, because it's Jim Bowen, isn't it? But Bowen just sometimes slips out. Well, yeah. Please, any other Neath residents, please get in touch for that. And in the meantime, we'll hear from the man himself and jump into mailbag straight after that.
Every one of them, the job that we, myself, Eddie Nesvesky, John O'Shea, the jobs we asked them to do, they took on board. And sometimes, you know, when you give in players, I've said this before, a lot of, you know, in my enthusiasm, giving the players perhaps too much information at time, and you wonder how much they take on board and whether they're going to play that in the game, and they certainly did today, and all manner of good performances. You know, I'll single out one, especially Omar Richards coming to the side. He's been disappointed, obviously. He's fighting for that place with Jordan Obita. We've got healthy competition there. But for a young player to come in, and I've, well, certainly since I've been looking at him in the first team, his best performance by a mile, and he's a real bright, he's going to be a right bright player for the future for us as well.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Some thoughts then from our dear listeners in the mailbag after a 3-0 victory over Luton, and Cognitive Dissident says Bowen in, or Bowen in, as we've just been discussing. So some nice support, I suppose. It's basically the opposite of what he got when he was appointed. SJ Watson saying, do we think Swift and Ajaria have been our best midfield pairing in recent times? Now, Johnny, I'm going to say Swift, Ajaria and Rinomota is the trio rather than the Swift and Ajaria duo, because I don't think without a player to sort of shore things up and give them the licence to roam, I don't think they're half as good. So in terms of the question, are they our best sort of central midfield sort of duo slash setup in recent times?
I mean, it's hard to make an argument that they're not, especially when they're given that freedom, and like a game on Saturday where we have that space and time and control of the match, that they are sort of allowed to do their thing. And, you know, again, going back to the system that Bowen employs, when you've got the three sort of centre-backs and then Rinomota, who is the midfield shuttler or shield, then you've got four defensive players at all times, which kind of gives, you know, it gives players like Ajari and Swift that little bit more freedom, or that little bit more, you know, that less defensive responsibility, and just that knowledge that they can sort of find the space if they need to. Now, like we said, tougher times are going to come against better midfields and against better sides and in tougher situations. But it's hard to say right now that we can think of a better sort of midfield, or certainly I'd say certainly more two more skillful midfielders in an attacking sense than Swift and Ajaria in recent seasons. And Rinomota, to go back to your point, sorry, Rinomota is the sort of the oil that keeps the cogs moving in terms of, you know, in terms of allowing those two to do what they do.
No, I know what you mean. And the thing is that we haven't, in I'm honestly trying to rack my brains. Let's go, say only back to 2015, for example. In that past 4 years, we haven't really had any brilliant central midfielders or anyone that kind of jumps out at me. Ollie Norwood was a very good midfielder, but wasn't used particularly well, or wasn't a, you know, wasn't the player that he is now. And then who else really honestly jumps out? I can't.
It's kind of tough to say, but we've always known that John Swift has that quality. I mean, I guess if you're going to go back to someone like Danny Williams, who seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth, as far as I know. But in terms of where he's in Cyprus at the moment, actually. But when we had Danny Williams in the midfield, and when you had Tish Boller emerging as well, that was sort of, I guess, sort of the last time we, I guess, sort of had a midfield that you felt confident could boss a game in a way. Whereas I think, you know, the kind of, like I was saying earlier, the accusation you've always sort of thrown against Reading is a bit kind of soft, especially someone like Swift. And, you know, you go back through the likes of Liam, you know, when we had like Liam Kelly and John Swift in the midfield, and you just thought, well, teams are going to walk through us.
And they did, to be fair to them.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas now when you've got Rinomota there, who's happy to do, you know, happy to do the sort of donkey work, and you've got three centre-backs rather, it gives Swift and Ajaria that little bit more creative freedom. I mean, I guess, you know, what's different from old Reading teams is that we've always known great wing play. We've always had brilliant wingers. Think of the likes of Makinoff and Kebbe being the two most recent sort of, you know, the pairing that you kind of instantly think of in most recently. And obviously before that, the likes of Convey, Hunt, and Glenn Little, sort of back in the glory days of 2005-06. And so it's always been those sort of wider midfielders that have had the quality and the creativity, whereas now it seems to be sort of, you know, more central with Swift and Ajaria. I mean, Ajaria does seem sort of more comfortable than Swift playing closer to the wing, but certainly Swift and Ajaria, I think you'd say, would feel most comfortable in the middle of the park. So I guess it's just sort of a shift in the balance of things in terms of where these players thrive.
Absolutely. And speaking of which, Jonathan sends in a message saying, I thought Omar Richards was superb. It'll be interesting to see who starts at left back against Brentford. If you had to lay down a fiver now, hashtag gamble away, Johnny, Obisu or Richards starting the first game back at Griffin Park?
I think it would be Obisu. I think nominally Obisu is probably first choice, but I mean, but Richards has made a really good case to stay in the team, hasn't he? Like you said earlier, it's a good competition. It's a good competition to have, and a good problem to have. But I think Obisu gives you a little bit more quality from dead balls and perhaps with crosses into the box. Perhaps a little bit more athleticism. He's a little bit taller as well, which, you know, some managers will sort of make a big deal of. I think nominally Obisu would be sort of the first choice of the two.
Well, Obisu, so I probably at the moment can't play Saturday, Tuesday, and that's what we have coming back. So one of them's going to, you know, they're going to swap for Brentford and Leeds. So which one's the more important game in a way? Do you play Richards at Brentford and then have Obisu, who's perhaps a bit more experienced against Leeds, or do you think that Richards is better defensively? I suppose it's going to be a really difficult thing for Bowen to work out.
Yeah, I mean, they're two tough games against two teams that are almost certainly going to be fighting, certainly in the case of Leeds, for automatic. And you'd imagine that Brentford's, well, I think, you know, they're only sort of 4 or 5 points off the playoffs at the moment. So, and they're on a really good run of form as well. So I think if you're looking for perhaps a priority game, it would probably be the Saturday after against Wigan, ironically. So I guess, you know, maybe Bowen would be looking forward to that and saying, right, well, I want X player for that, so I'll play Y player for the game previous and then, you know, work back that way. Yeah, who knows? I think the good thing is that, especially right now, you feel confident in both left backs, whereas a month or two ago, we had no confidence in the defence whatsoever.
Which is, I suppose, which it is a nice place to be in, isn't it? And yeah, we'll have to wait and see which one is given the shout for which game, because I very much understand that we're going to be having to swap them around continuously, unless he fancies playing Richards in both games, which probably isn't going to happen given their sort of competition. Royal Dave tweets us saying, really impressed with us today. We looked really dangerous at times. Not sure if it was just because Luton were rubbish, but we performed as well as we've done all season. And Mark Robson also tweets us. You can get in touch with us for the mailbag, Twitter, Facebook, both on the Tarlhurst End and the Tarlhurst End at gmail.com. Mark saying, good game, brilliant for the team to win again. Don't think it's all good. All the support is going for Gav McCleary due to him being a crybaby all the time. But 10 points from 12, we are a good team. I think McCleary being a crybaby is a little bit harsh, really. Because, you know, to put yourself in the boots of a footballer, Johnny, to be exiled effectively from the team and then for the team to be not doing so well is probably a little bit of a tough situation to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and it's something that I've actually been thinking about more and more recently, is the mental side of the game. You don't really sort of appreciate, you know, for not to sort of, you know, psychoanalyze this, but these are human beings as well. And, you know, I don't for one minute think that Gareth McCleary was sort of sitting at home on his sofa thinking, oh, brilliant, 10 grand a week and I don't have to do anything. He's a professional. And what he wants to do is play football and, you know, be adored by fans rather than seeing sort of, you know, probably tweets and messages about him not contributing. And so, yeah, you know, we saw it in that Instagram post that he left. I think the outpouring of emotion to finally be able to do what, you know, what he loves, which is to, you know, play football and score goals in front of that crowd is, yeah, it's important for him. And yeah, I do think that generally we do sort of sometimes forget that, especially in this area of, in this era of social media, that, you know, these are human beings that we are judging and chastising and swearing at often far too often.
No, I know what you mean. And I would say when I was speaking to Jordan Abita the other week and he said, I just want to play football. Coming from a player like him who spent 2 years out, you really believe it. And from someone like McCleary, when you say about, oh, that's brilliant, I get to sit at home and pocket 10 grand a week. Someone like McCleary, I don't think he's played in Premier League apart from this sort of season with us. And when getting into your sort of 30s, you probably think that, you know, there's only going to be so many more chances you're going to get at that sort of level or any chances at all to get to the top level. And you probably think it's much more important than maybe if you're someone like Royston Drenthe, for example, who got to the top so quickly, fell down and then found themselves sitting, you know, on 10 grand a week contracts with not very good teams who weren't playing him. It's very different perspectives from two individuals who are effectively, you know, both footballers.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I'd say for Gareth McCleary is, he's 32, he's 33 at the end of the season. As far as I know, his contract expires at the end of this season. He's not going to be thinking of retirement. He's going to be thinking, right, I want to keep on playing. And whether that's, you know, you'd have to say at this stage, it probably almost certainly won't be with Reading, but whether it's with another Championship club or Elite One club, he's going to be wanting to show what he can do and show that he is still worthy of playing, especially with someone like him who constantly seems to have had injury problems. I think was it under Steve Clarke who said he constantly came back from international duty with little calf tears and things like that.
I think he broke his constantly back at one point, didn't he?
Yeah, I certainly remember that he constantly had problems with muscle injuries. And so he probably feels frustrated that, you know, he hasn't fulfilled his potential as a player. But, you know, at the same time, this is still a player who in sort of six seasons with us has made over 200 appearances probably. And when he's on form has been a really good player. And the other thing I'd say is, in terms of players having passion for the game, you only have to look at people like, he was my childhood hero, but Jamie Cureton, who's still at the age of 44, is still playing football. You know, it might only be in sort of the seventh or eighth tier of football, but he's still playing because he loves the game. Someone like James Harper as well, who, you know, I'm sure pocketed a decent amount of money while we were in the Premier League, and you know, his multiple moves. But again, you know, he's still playing, sort of. He must be into his late 30s by now. So it's not as though these players, some of them just love the game that much that they are just happy to keep playing and keep playing, and it's all that they know in some cases. And so doing what you love and doing something that you are good at is what these players want to do, no matter how much they might be earning for it. The fact that the two examples I just said, Harper and Kiriton, are still playing at relatively lowly levels, even at their ages, shows that they just love doing what they do.
Speaking of which, I seem to remember that Jay Tab is still playing rugby or whatever. So he's constantly jumping around different sports, Jay Tab. So in terms of players who just enjoy getting, you know, getting the boots on and getting out on the pitch, there's vast waves of them who are also coincidentally footballers. So yeah, we'll have to see how Gareth McCleary does over the next few weeks. But I think for now, he's certainly, as the off the bench option, is probably the first one that Burnley will turn to. And as we go into the international break, let's jump into news bites and just update you quickly on who is going out where.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Medeski Stadium and the Championship with News Bites.
Let's just talk quickly about the call-ups, and the England youth call-ups are the ones that I'm going to run down because, as I said earlier, Gunter in Wales, and not too many players are going out on their international trips this week. But Conyer Boyce-Clark is a Reading goalkeeper in his teen years. He's going out with the England under-17s team. Gerry O'Dorset, the centre-back, out with the under-18s England team. And Danny Lode, who came off the bench against Luton, he's with the under-20s. So some good experience for those guys, hopefully. Across the other teams, the under-18s lost 2-1 to Southampton on Saturday. They've got Crystal Palace in the FA Youth Cup, which is provisionally set for Saturday, December the 14th at the Medeski Stadium. So a bit of a tough game, that, in the third round of the Youth Cup. The women weren't playing this week. It's the international break, as those of you who saw the England-Germany game at Wembley will know. So they're next in action at the Madstad, Sunday the 17th of November against Bristol City. And the under-23s beat Swansea in the Premier League Cup. Lucas Boye off back in the team and scoring the winner. And Johnny, Lucas Boye, who, you know, was a pretty constant fixture in the team at the start of the year, where does he fit in now under Bowen?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. And, you know, especially with Boye unlikely to be here again next season. And I mean, you know, unless we can somehow continue this form, you'd have to sort of say that promotion is probably just about out of the reckoning now. So are we going to get to the situation in sort of January, February, where Bowen is saying, right, well, we're probably going to be safe and we're probably not going to go up. So is it the time to sort of assess for next season? And if someone like Boye isn't part of his plans, then perhaps he doesn't get another look in. And I mean, I've been quite impressed with him in the time that he's spent on the pitch. I think he's got something about him. You can see that in terms of his quality. But especially sort of in the system as well that Bowen seems to have settled on, I'm not sure that he's a better option than anyone that's pulling on the shirt at the moment, certainly in terms of the starting lineup. And then when, you know, like I was saying with sort of the squad going forward, are you going to want to prefer to give some minutes to someone like Michael Elise out of the academy, who's seen sort of limited time so far, or even Danny Loder if he were to stay on past next season, rather than, you know, a lone player who, you know, might get you sort of five or 10 more points, but ultimately isn't going to sort of be here next season. I mean, you know, these are, I guess, good decisions to have to make.
Yeah, it's difficult to see, because with Gomez, the way that he basically just put two people up front and kind of said, go off and do your thing, it was very easy to see Boye where he's going to fit into that. But with the clear role of Baldock as the sort of hustler, harrier striker, is Boye that sort of player? Probably say not, but maybe. Is he going to overtake Puskas as the sort of striker on the end of chances? Again, probably not. Is he going to do a Gareth McCleary and drop in centre and field? Probably not.
Exactly. I think there's sort of a place for him in on the subs bench, or a sort of, you know, if we do decide to shift to a different formation for a game, then there's certainly a place for him. But I don't think he'll be one of the first names on the team sheet. He's, you know, I think certainly in terms of a bench option, he's good to have around.
Yeah, no, I do agree on that, and we'll have to see with the games that we've got coming up after the international break, if he's first fit, and then if he's going to be included in the squad or the starting 11 for those. So let's jump into big game preview and just have a little quick look across what's going to be happening for Reading FC after the international break.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Well, the title of this podcast is this always going to be this easy? And from the next three games Reading have, the answer is probably going to be no. Brentford away on the first Saturday back, then Leeds at home on the Tuesday, 8 p.m. back in the Mazda, and then the following Saturday, Wigan away. And this is probably the first... I mean, it feels weird to say it's the first real test, because we played Preston, who obviously in the, you know, top three, top two. They didn't play very well, though. We played QPR, who were doing quite well. They didn't actually play very well against Reading, and we got a point. Then we played two pretty poor teams who are going to be in the lower half of the table. Now we have two teams who are going to be probably in the upper half of the table, maybe top six, and then Wigan at home are always a difficult... You know, when we have to go to Wigan, is always a difficult game. So this really does feel like these three games are going to show whether we're currently living in the honeymoon or, you know, the reality of what Bowen can achieve at Reading.
Yeah, and I certainly don't think it's going to be all doom and gloom if Brentford, you know, if we do lose at Brentford and at home to Leeds, because certainly Leeds, you know, are a quality side who don't really concede any goals whatsoever and are going to be, you know, perennially a promotion challengers. And Brentford are in an absolutely cracking run of form at the moment. You know, aside from losing to Huddersfield a couple of games ago, they are scoring goals for fun. So we can't forget. I think, as I said last time I was on the podcast, this is a team that in four of the last five seasons has finished in the bottom six in the Championship. Now that we've gone on a four-match unbeaten run, we are not suddenly promotion contenders, and we're not suddenly, you know, playoff chasing side. We are a team that I think if you ask most Reading fans now, where would you hope to finish? I think, you know, mid-table, even before the season, you'd probably said lower mid-table would be a decent sort of place, a decent building block for this season. And so if you're losing to the likes of Brentford and Leeds, I don't think there's any shame in that. I think the bigger game does come a week later against Wigan, who, you know, did just lose to Brentford, because that not only is sort of an opportunity to sort of say, look, we're better than those, you know, it's an opportunity to put more distance between yourselves and the teams that you might peg for relegation. But then equally, if we were to lose that game against Wigan, then suddenly that sort of drags us back into it. And potentially you're looking at three losses on the bounce. And then where do you bounce back from there? So, you know, to come back to the question, it is a key period. But at least we will go into these three games knowing that we can grind out results, as we've seen at QPR. And we do have the quality to put teams to the sword, as we've seen most recently against Luton and for 60 minutes against Millwall.
And Reading are 17th at the moment. We're 18 points, so that means we're 5 clear of the relegation zone, 10 points away from the playoffs. And to be honest, if you put us in, you know, not a week's time, but after those three games, if you said that we are still 5 clear and 10 away, then I think we'd be perfectly happy with that. And that probably means about 4 points. If it's 3 points then, and, you know, we have some good performances, so be it. But it's that classic case of, you know, let's say we go to Brentford and lose a couple goals. There is still that worry that we struggle to bounce back, and that the classic mental fragility that we're aware of with Reading over the years does sort of come back to haunt us. But I would say that at the moment, I'm not too worried about that. And I think that we will have the ability to grind out, as you say, a couple draws in these games.
I'm not so sure that we'll be able to grind out draws, but I think there'll be a bit more sort of bounce back ability, to coin a phrase, in this team. I think
like I said, I think the word under Bowen has been pragmatism, and I think if we do lose, I don't think we'll get hammered, but I do think that at the same time, I think there would be more belief in the squad that losing at a team like Brentford or at home to a team like Leeds is just a blip. Whereas I feel like under Gomez, especially towards the end, it was, oh, another loss, here we go. And we're not going into these games with any belief. And certainly it felt like with no sort of tactical adjustments or tactical plans to kind of get the best result. Whereas I do feel, at least from what we've seen in the last month or so, that Bowen can set his teams up to at least be competitive. And so I think as long as we're seeing teams being competitive, the Reading team being competitive and sort of, you know, fighting for the victory, then that's sort of confidence in itself. It almost doesn't, I mean, obviously the result matters, but like I said, I don't think these players will be going into these games thinking we've got to win or we've got to get a draw. There are bigger battles to fight, and ultimately I think this season is still about not necessarily surviving relegation, but being comfortably clear of relegation by February, March time.
Well, talking of bigger battles that are coming ahead, let's round off the episode with the Prediction League and the veritable points bonanza that has befallen us in the last fortnight, with all of us predicting two wins and us getting actually two wins at home, which is a very rare thing, probably never happened before in the Prediction League. And Westy was the man who came up trumps this week with the 3-0 prediction, as those of you who listened last week will remember. So Westy's up to 9 points now, so bringing up the rear's handbags on 5, Sim and Ollie on 7, Wim and Westy on 9, yourself, Johnny, on 10, then I'm away on 15 points. So just as you're more than welcome to alter this prediction as we go over the next fortnight, and as, you know, if all our players get injured or something like that, or all Brentford's players get injured, what is your current sort of state of mind for going to Brentford as a prediction?
I think we'll lose 2-1, but I do think that we will stay in the game and show more fight. And I think this is another key thing as well, is obviously we've only gone behind once under Bowen, and that was against QPR, and 2 minutes later we were level. And having that confidence when you go behind, I think is going to be so much more important, because the heads won't drop that little bit more. The heads will still sort of stay up and say, look, we can get back into this. We can still sort of fight and get a result out of this. So I'll go for, I think, a 2-1, a battling 2-1 defeat would suit me. Obviously, a victory would suit me even better before I get naysayers on my Twitter feed. But I think this team sort of showing that little bit of heart, not just rolling over, is what you'd want, certainly from the next two games.
I agree that is the key sort of thing at the moment. And I'm still just going to hold out and say 1-1 for Brentford for the moment. Looking at the form tables, they are a good team, but in terms of their home form, not one of the best teams. So quite low scoring as well. So hopefully we can go there and keep things tight. I think Bowen, as his pragmatism that we much discussed this week, shows that that's something we're more than likely to do, I think. So that wraps up episode 209 of the Thylacine Podcast. Johnny, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
And thank you everyone for listening. And we are jumping ahead now into the international break, which does not mean, for once I can say, does not mean that we're taking a week off. In fact, that show is already in the bag and is going to be coming out Friday morning. Our interview with Jordan Obita, our exclusive chat down at Hogwood, for a nice, you know, a good 25 minutes we've got with Jordan, talking about his injury, talking about his coming through the team as a youth prodigy and all sorts of things aside. So please tune in for that, and we'll see you on the other side. And Brentford, Leeds and Wigan coming up for Reading now. Will it always be that easy? I suppose if we get 3 wins from the next 3 games, the answer to that question will be yes. Come on, you ass. Leave a trail.
you smile. Funny how the crowds always be betrayed, even when it's